asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking new Apple iBank, generational disparagement, and culinary culprits.
That's right, buddy. Those are just a few of the mini stories that we're going to get to during today's Friday flight. And by the way, if you are new here, we like to cover a bunch of the different stories that we've come across this past week and talk specifically how those stories are going to impact your personal finances.
Yeah.
That's why we call it the Friday flight. They're nice little samples, as if you were going to go to a brewery and you want to get a flight. You don't want to commit to any one story. You just want to, just a little taste.
That way, when there's water cooler talk about money at your work, you're like, oh yeah, I know what's going on. I
heard the boys talk about that.
But not only do you know what's going on, you know how to react to the news. So, because there are things, a lot of things that are happening here and there. Like, we know the basics of personal finance, but there's stuff happening all the time that should kind of just change our trajectory or change what we do.
Doesn't change just the trajectory, but it does impact the day-to-day movements.
Yeah, like
of the overall.
Like we're talking about iBonds. Like the way we treat iBonds a year ago has changed to how you should perceive them today. We'll get to that more
and
today.
By the way, happy Friday to you. You and I, we both went for a walk today after lunch.
It was lovely.
It's so nice out. I think this is like the best time of year when it's nice and crisp in the morning when you hop on the bike and you're a little bit cold when you first get on, but by the time you get off the bike, you're like perfectly warm.
It's before the mosquitoes hit.
Oh, so mosquitoes aren't out yet. Oh, yeah. I love this time.
Yeah, this is the best. This is the best. All right, Matt, real quick, before we get to all the stories that we need to cover today on the show, we talked about insurance on Wednesday, and we've got this listener, Nate, who's in the insurance business, and he's emailed a few different times. He's been really helpful over the years. He's the one actually who told us about Trusted Choice, which is a great site to find an independent agent. And one of the things he mentioned after in the aftermath of our Wednesday episode, as I am still meeting with people, the adjuster came out this week, the structural engineer came out this week.
Any big updates, by the way?
No big updates. It's slow but sure. We're going to get there, but it's going to take some time.
I hear you.
But one of the things he mentioned was, well, yeah, you're talking about a tree falling through your house, but what if a fire happened? And what if you lost all your possessions? It's really hard to remember what you had to be able to document it for insurance purposes. And I was like, that's a great point. I don't remember if we talked about that. I don't think we did. I know we have before on the show, but one thing that people should do probably once a year is to walk through their house and video everything they have, going to every room. And Nate said, man, I did this the other day. I have like $250 in my shower alone. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, you don't think about.
He likes to splurge on the nice shampoo.
I guess he's got one of those like handcrafted Japanese razors or something like that. I don't know. I'm taking a guess.
Have we not talked about doing the video? Did we not say that on Wednesday?
I don't think we did. So, but we have like years ago, but I don't know if we talked about it on Wednesday.
I mean, Kate and I, back when we ran our photography company, we would do that once a year in addition to having a spreadsheet that we would update with our latest gear. Yeah. But then just a quick video of all of our possessions was a great, very easy, quick way to document, yeah, all the stuff that you've got. And like you said,
makes it easier to prove, but it makes it easier to remember.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that in particular, when you're talking about an entire house, you probably forget.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, what about that lamp? Yeah, if it's burned up and gone, yes, you might be easy to forget. So
exactly. So yeah. Big ups to Nate. Thank you. And we learn too. We're always learning, Matt. And so that's why the Facebook group is helpful. And when listeners email us with suggestions, that's helpful. We appreciate all of our How to Money listeners. And if you're not a member of the Facebook group, by the way, we're past 10,000 people in there. It's just folks helping each other. It's like one of the kindest, sweetest places on the internet. So go check it out.
Strong.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move on though, Matt. Let's get to the sampling of stories we found interesting this week. And let's start by talking about online shopping, because The Verge, they report that Amazon is starting to flag products on their site that get returned often. I think this is awesome. They're basically alerting all of us that this item that you're trying to purchase, that it might not be great.
It's like a crappy product alert.
Right, exactly. He's like, hey, 20% returns on this. A lot of people will end up not liking it. And so they're going to be putting a frequently returned item tag on stuff that gets returned a lot. And so given the number of random brands on Amazon these days, there's just been a surge, Matt, in the kind of off-brand sort of offerings on Amazon and a bunch of other websites. Combined with the fake review problem, this feels like a necessity. So I'm glad to see Amazon doing something proactive on this front. And at least it's going to help you see that you might need to do some extra digging at least before you purchase. You might say, hey, no, I think I really want this, but at least that acts as like a red flag to do your due diligence. And so I don't know. Even though you can return the product, if it doesn't work out, let's be honest, that's a hassle. And so it's just easier to avoid buying stuff that might turn out to be a piece of crap to begin with.
That's definitely true. And in addition to that, Amazon, they are also following the trend of charging customers to even make those returns. So it's kind of like a double whammy. Not only do you have the hassle, but it's going to cost you a little bit too.
True.
Dude, we've got this entire counter that we've kind of almost solely dedicated to the return of different packages. And so we certainly are going to be impacted by this. But some folks are going to have to now pay $1 in order to return their items to a UPS location if Amazon has a preferred return site, like a Kohl's or a Whole Foods, that they would rather have you make that return to instead. So if one of those exists, you're going to be paying $1.
Yeah.
And even though that's not necessarily going to break the bank, we've talked about how other retailers are also charging folks to send stuff back through the mail, where they're trying to encourage folks, you know, they're trying to push them to bring those items back to a physical retail location. But the fact is, you know, these returns, they just cost retailers a lot of money, not only in shipping, but just warehousing and figuring out what to do with these gently used items, because there's a lot of folks, I mean, and I will readily admit that this is something that we do, but if an item is not up to snuff after we've tested it out, we say, well, shoot, this is a piece of junk. Maybe if it hadn't flagged as an item that gets returned a lot, we could have avoided that to begin with. But understandably, retailers, online retailers, they want us to pony up and to be a partner when it comes to the returns that we're making.
Mutual shared pain.
Yeah, yeah. Free shipping, free returns. They aren't free for those businesses. And hopefully, honestly, I think this is going to impact us positively, because I think these changes can maybe encourage us. They can cause us all to think a little more on the front end before we make maybe a spur of the moment purchasing decision.
Yeah.
But I think anytime there's a little bit of friction that keeps us from buying stuff without giving it much thought at all is probably a good thing.
Exactly. If we're like, hey, not only am I going to have to go through the process of returning it, but I'm going to have to pay a little bit of money too at the same time, maybe we'll think twice before we just click yep, bye.
Yeah, I think it's understandable too, given just the history of online retail. I feel like we've sort of been in this honeymoon phase as different online retailers have been trying to gobble up market share, essentially, right? And so folks like Amazon, they were offering that no questions asked, free shipping, free returns for Prime users. And now they're starting to look at profitability. It makes me think of like...
Now they've got you addicted.
yeah, exactly. It makes me think of like ride-sharing apps. Early on, you could get somewhere for really cheap. Early on, if you were a driver, you were getting paid, I think, better than you are now.
It was the venture capitalists losing money in hopes that they would get a bigger share of the pie at the end of the day.
But all that VC funding is dried up, and other corporations like Amazon, they're looking to increase their profits as well. So I think we're out of that honeymoon phase, and It's about to get real.
Yeah, I think
you're
right.
About to realize the true cost of online retail.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about credit cards. The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they want to make it easier for people to find the right credit card. And there are sites out there, like our very own, Matt, that have created tools to help people choose a credit card that makes the most sense for them.
How to Money credit card tool.
Yeah, which is great. You can find that at howtomoney.com/creditcards.
Easy to use sliders on there.
Exactly.
It's a fun tool to play
with. It's slick and it's helpful. We want people to find the best credit card for how they spend. And it's really hard to say this is the best credit card in existence for everyone, because so much of like the rewards you garner depends on how you spend. And so you need to find the right credit card for you. But the CFPB, Matt, they're attempting to accumulate even more data and information on basically every single credit card in existence, even ones that are offered by the small-time credit unions around the country. And so I don't know when this tool is going to come out. It's hard to tell how long it's going to take. It's probably going to be months and months. And is it going to be a more helpful tool? I'm not sure yet. I mean, it depends on kind of how they implement it.
If it even gets rolled out. Right now, they're just collecting data. They're in the data gathering stage and getting all of this information from credit card companies.
But at some point, there might be some sort of mega tool to rule them all from the CFPB.
Yeah, maybe.
We just don't know. We'll report back. But for now, we still think that the How to Money credit card tool is a winner for helping you pick a great card. So be sure to check that out. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Definitely. Yeah. And of course, only use credit cards if you can use them properly, if you can pay them off on time and in full, because those rewards, they're not going to be very rewarding if you are paying interest to the credit card companies, to the banks. And we should also mention that for the disciplined user, it seems that credit card rewards continue to get better, or they have been getting better, at least in recent years. And that's been proved out by the amount that card issuing banks have been spending in credit card rewards in order to lure new customers and to keep them happy. It turns out that is up 43% since 2019 to the tune of $68 billion in 2022.
That's a lot of rewards being showered on the masses by the credit card issuers out there.
Yeah, yeah. And that data, I mean, it correlates with a pandemic as well, right?
Yeah.
And so as we all saw lots of money infused into our accounts, that stimmy money, basically, the banks were saying, we want a part of that. We don't want to see people spending cash. We want them putting those charges on credit cards.
On plastic, yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, we will see whether or not that continues. But if you can use credit cards the way nature intended, that was actually the episode of the name of an episode that we recorded recently. We'll link to that one in the show notes as well. I think that was episode 629. But if that's you, hopefully you're going to be able to continue racking up these better signup bonuses, these better cashback continuing rewards than ever before.
Better travel rewards too.
Yes. Yeah. And we will see whether or not these credit card rewards, whether or not this bonanza lasts forever, because it may not, because politicians, they've had their eyes set on the sky high swipe fees that the major credit card companies like Visa and MasterCard that they charge, and that could also have an impact on the rewards that we receive as users. But for the time being, go ahead and max out those rewards as long as you're able to keep your spending in check.
Yeah, the system sure ain't perfect, and Visa and MasterCard, they benefit from an imperfect system. They kind of like it the way it is, and they don't mind showering rewards on us because they do well too. But not everyone benefits equally, and so I think that's why it's become a political item these days. But at least for now, yeah, like you said, max your rewards, use the system to your advantage if you can handle credit reasonably, if you can handle it without going overboard. Let's talk about high-yield savings accounts, Matt. There's a new player in the game, Apple. Is now, and they got a bank, right? iBank.
You're talking about some iSavings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you got
some iInterest.
iEverything, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's like two I's in a row. Interest. But they just continue to branch into more sectors. Apple's trying to take over the world, it seems. They've already got a credit card, which offers 2% cash back when you use it at an Apple Pay, which I think Apple Pay is accepted in like 90% of locations now.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've launched a savings account with a rate of 4.15%. I saw some chatter in the Facebook group that I mentioned earlier, Matt, and there are listeners already signing up for this because it's so easy.
All the Apple fanboys and girls out there are just like,
already got the app on my phone. I like Apple. Why not?
Well, I will say one of the things that Apple implemented when they launched their Apple Card was the ability to have that little dashboard.
Yes.
It shows you, it's like a little gauge, and they show you how much you've spent and the disconnect from people using their cards to when they received their statement at the end of the month was something that Apple addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, other credit card issuers started to do the same thing. And so the ability, anytime there's competition, we're always for that.
Yeah, and there's more competition in the banking space now, in the high yield banking space. And there's a lot of people who were with the big banks who probably wouldn't have switched if it wasn't Apple launching the bank, right? Because they've got the iPhone. They're like, yeah, all right, why not? And they're benefiting because they go from something like 0.01% interest to 4.15% interest, which is a massive jump. So I love seeing this. Like Apple, they don't have their own banking charter, so they've partnered with Goldman Sachs. That's what allows them to do this. And you can open up an account now if you're an iPhone user on the Wallet app on your phone. I'm an Android user, so I cannot. But you know, they're not charging any fees or establishing any minimum balance requirements. They're kind of doing what a lot of our favorite online banks are doing. And so it just looks like we might have another solid online bank to recommend, Matt. And I think they're going to gain market share rather quickly, just given how they're already in the pockets of tens of millions of people. Yeah. So I love to see it. If you want to open a savings account with Apple, go for it. They're paying in top tier rates right now.
Yeah, and billions more people might. Did you see Apple? They just launched their first brick and mortar store in India.
That's right.
So there's going to be a lot more customers, a lot more folks who might consider financial products.
Yes, exactly. They really are taking over the world, it seems.
You know what this also makes me think of was, I guess, was it last week we talked about the Google Flight price guarantee.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember how it is that you get your refund were you to book one of their flights and the price drops?
Back through Google Pay.
The money goes through Google Pay. And yeah. So it just seems that these different software, all these big tech companies, they're wanting to get more and more into your finances.
Yeah.
They're wanting to seamlessly integrate. And I think that's pretty interesting. It could provide a lot of convenience and features for us, but we still need to make sure that we are being careful with the different products that they're offering to us. And we're not just walking down the path of least resistance.
Yes.
And speaking of savings, I-bonds, they are starting to lose their luster. There hasn't been an official announcement of what the rate on I-bonds will be once it gets reworked, once it resets on May 1st. But we're likely to see it drop below 4%. That's what a lot of the experts are predicting. And what that means is that you can now earn more in that Apple savings account and actually have more flexibility all the while. So back, you know, last year when I-bond rates were near 10%, they were a slam dunk medium term option for parking some dollars, saving for some of those medium term goals.
Yeah, rates on actual savings accounts hadn't reached the level that they're at now.
They had not caught up.
So there
yet.
Was a massive gap between what you get on I-bonds and what you were getting in regular online savings.
Yeah, but as inflation has cooled, I-bonds are becoming less attractive. So what this means is that if you purchase I-bonds before the end of April, you can still snag that basically it's a 6.9% rate. But given the constraints of I-bonds, that blended rate that you're going to likely snag over an actual calendar year after over 12 months, that's going to likely make I-bonds less attractive than savings and even CDs. And so if you purchase them at their apex and you're wondering when to cash out, that's not a terribly easy question to answer. So much of it actually depends on when you made that purchase. Because if you don't hold them for at least 5 years, you're going to forfeit the most recent 3 months of interest. And so what that means is you're going to want to wait at least 3 months until after your rate drops to this new lower amount before selling them.
Yeah.
So it's just something to keep in mind. I feel like I-bonds, they had their 5 minutes of fame.
Their moment in the sun.
It is quickly coming to an end.
I was talking with our friend, one of my friends the other day, and he was like, I don't know, it seemed like too much of a hassle to even get into the I-bonds thing. Then I get it because the Treasury Direct website just sucks. It's so bad. And navigating it is no fun. But that rate was hard to beat, like I said, at the time. And so I'm really glad I did. I put some money in some medium-term savings into I-bonds, like we talked about here on the show. But now you got to figure out how and when to get out.
If you stuck 10 grand in, you're seeing that close to 11 grand now over just the past 12 months, basically.
That's right. So I don't know how long I'll keep mine around. My guess is probably for another like 5 or 6 months. It just depends. I gotta do some digging on that. Just like everybody does who bought them, and then now they're like, can I do better elsewhere?
Sink some of that I-bond money into your house, perhaps.
That's right.
As you're paying for the deductible and other potential repairs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. But Matt, we've got more to get to on the money front. There's a lot that happened this week on the electric vehicle front. Prices going down, federal tax credits going away. We'll kind of like talk about how the dust has settled on that. We'll talk about rents getting cheaper too. We'll get to all that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
All right, man, we are back from the break talking about the financial stories that you need to be paying attention to, and it is now time for the ludicrous headline of the week. And sometimes we will highlight an online publisher or a magazine that nobody's ever heard of, and you kind of think, well, yeah, naturally they've got a story that seems kind of silly.
Occasionally, a local TV station.
Yeah,
they do
yeah,
goofy
yeah.
stuff from time to time.
Yeah. But no, this one comes from the Wall Street Journal.
The OG.
Yeah. And here is the title of this article. They Can't Even. A Generation Avoids Facing Its Finances. And all right, so first of all, the headline, man.
You were pissed when you saw this. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I'm not. It was just a little annoying.
Not like fuming mad, but you were like, what in the world?
So the headline, they can't even. I'm just not a big fan of media outlets taking this approach, right? Where they're just overgeneralizing. They're targeting a specific generation, or in this case, two generations, millennials and Gen Z. And I think what they're doing is they're communicating that younger generations are basically idiots, right? Like, they're implying that anyone out there who is 40 years old or younger, they just can't get their stuff together, rather than maybe this just being a natural process of growing up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, like, when you're younger, you're going to make dumber decisions, right? Like, you're less informed. You don't have as much experience. But you know what? This is something that every generation experiences. I can think back to Gen X, right? I'm right on the cusp of being a very, very young Gen Xer, or being, you know, like we like to say, a geriatric millennial. But I can think back to when, like, all the Gen X stories were in the headlines, and they're being described as slackers. Dude, even boomers, they're all grown up. They're all smart and mature. They're all retiring now. They've got plenty of money. They came of age.
They're not all smart.
Well, they're not all smart.
Probably a lot of them.
But like, this is the generation that grew up in the 60s and the 70s. Like, these were hippies, and they were also kind of drug through the mud a little bit. I don't know.
This always happens. The older generation.
It's a recurring thing. Yeah. So they're just sticking it to whatever new generation comes along. And like,
it never
feels
good.
These different generational names, like they can just be used and they can be helpful as you're talking about different subsets of a population. But I just felt like it's necessary to go to bat for us fellow millennials, for all the Gen Zers out there who might be crushing it when it comes to their actual finances, yeah, as opposed to just overgeneralizing.
A lot of stereotyping, and a lot of it's not actually accurate. Like, I feel like the intergenerational finger pointing is kind of silly. It never stops, especially when we're talking about headlines from the Wall Street Journal, The Atlantic, like just big publications. They like to paint with a broad brush when it comes to generational tendencies. But the other interesting thing, Matt, is that the data shows that the pejorative view of millennials and Gen Z, that it's not as accurate as a lot of people believe. There was an article, fortunately, that I saw this week in The Atlantic, basically saying that it was called the myth of the broke millennial. And basically what the author was saying is, while millennial generation faced economic headwinds that slowed their progress, by 2019, the average millennial household was making more than boomers and Gen Xers when they were the same age. And so,
all right,
the facts kind of prove some of the stereotypes wrong. Millennial homeownership rates, they're on par with previous generations too, and they've experienced a surge in home values, so their net worth is also on par with where Gen Xers were when they were basically our age.
Boom.
And so,
was it adjusted for inflation as well? I assume so.
I think it was, yeah. But it was, because of course, yeah.
Otherwise, it'd be like, oh, of course, they're making more.
Right, yeah. But like, this doesn't apply to every single millennial. Not every single millennial has prospered in the same way, but from a generational perspective, millennials are doing incredibly well, contrary to popular opinion, contrary to the way the Wall Street Journal took them to task in this article.
Get it together, Journal. it's amazing how just some proper data can just correct a narrative. But while we've been picking on this Wall Street Journal headline, there was some decent information in the actual article, though, because the author, they cite some research from the American Psychological Association, and they specifically discuss financial avoidance. And this is basically how folks cope with money stress by simply ignoring it. But of course, that is no way to live your life. You're just kicking the can down the road. You're ignoring the reality of your finances. You're just sticking your head in the sand instead of actually owning up and just addressing the problem.
Why do ostriches do that, by the way? Does anyone know?
Is that how they sleep?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Are they looking for food?
I don't know.
Or are they literally just trying to avoid life? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I feel like it has something to do with sleep.
It must.
I don't know. I know very little about ostriches.
Why don't we pick on the ostriches then? Come on, they're doing it for a reason, guys.
But as far as the actual problems that younger adults are dealing with, the more recent data out there shows that eating out is a major culprit. Americans are spending over $95 billion at restaurants. This is way more than what they're spending at the grocery store.
Was that last year? It was per year, right? $95 billion?
2023, yeah.
Okay.
So basically, for every $100 that folks are spending at the grocery store, they're spending $130 eating out.
Wow.
Which is crazy. And so, that being said, if you're thinking, well, hey guys, I've got zero culinary skills. I am no Bobby Flay. I am no Hugh Atchison. These are our local guys.
Or someone who lives right down the street from us.
Oh,
Alton Brown.
Alton Brown, that's right.
He is a local celebrity here where we live. I ran into him at the barbecue place not too long ago.
Yeah. I saw him walking his dog one time when I
rode
past. But if you're thinking, I don't know how to cook like those guys, I don't know how to make a decent meal at home in order to save money, well, if that is you, don't fear. We've actually got your back, because Frankie Salenza, he is the culinary host behind Struggle Meals. He's actually going to join us on Monday's episode to talk about cooking. So you can look forward to that one.
Frankie rocks. I feel like Frankie is the new generation of Alton Brown. He's like younger, but he knows what he's talking about, and he's so interesting. Mm-hmm. And his show is
smart.
They're bite-sized shows too. They're 8 or 10 minutes online, and I feel like Struggle Meals is like the food network for the next generation. So you can look forward to that one.
I like it.
But Matt, let's talk about electric vehicles for a second. A lot of EVs no longer qualify for the full federal tax credit as of this past Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We mentioned that that was coming down the pike, but we didn't know exactly which ones were going to make the cut. A few still do, though, including our favorite incredibly inexpensive EV, the Chevy Bolt EUV, which can be had for not much more than $20,000 after the full $7,500 tax credit, which is pretty impressive given the average cost of a new car. You can't get a new car for $25,000 or less, except for basically that. There's like three of them left on the market. Seriously. The pickings are slim. Tesla, they cut prices on some of their models even more this week too. The Model Y, for instance, can now be had for just a hair under $40,000 after the tax credit, which is pretty impressive. And it's going to save a lot of people money every single month on repairs and gas at the same time. You know, we're not necessarily fans of people going out there and buying new cars, but it makes sense for some people for sure. And so that it just feels like the EV market has changed overnight. We were talking, I think, like December of last year, Matt, about how much more expensive EVs were getting. Well, the competition is getting stiff and prices are going down. And Tesla, they're reducing prices because they're trying to go from selling hundreds of thousands of units a year to millions, right? Yeah.
Or like from 1 million to 2 million.
Yeah.
Like they're looking to like double the number of new Teslas on the road.
Exactly. Which makes sense. They're trying to compete with the big boys. And so, yeah, does buying a new EV make sense for you? Well, it depends on a whole slew of factors, of course, including but not limited to how many miles you drive. But with prices coming down in a meaningful way, even with a reduced number of models currently qualifying for that tax credit, I think increased adoption rates are likely to continue. And I think for other folks who are like, yeah, I'm still on the fence about an EV, I think 2 to 3 years from now might even be a sweeter spot for a lot of people to jump in as competition continues to increase and we see more lower price models that qualify for that full federal tax credit come into play.
Exactly. Yeah, that competition only benefits us as consumers, as companies are wanting to, again, get a piece of that market share and they're willing to compete. They're going to make models that vary in price. That way, the only options that are available to us aren't just like the premium high-end luxury vehicles.
Well, and when you think about what's happening already, like the Fords had to cut the price of their Mach-E Mustang because Tesla's cutting prices. Mm-hmm. And so it's starting to lead to just lower prices on most EV models.
That's right, man. All right, let's talk about housing. Specifically, let's talk about rents because they fell here in the U.S. 0.4% last month, marking the first year-over-year drop since the beginning of the pandemic. And you know why that was back in 2020. This is according to new data from Redfin. But part of the reason is that we are seeing more supply. We're seeing more units being finished up that are being completed. Rents are still up roughly 20% from before the pandemic, but this is good news for inflation and renters that we appear to be seeing some disinflationary effects finally actually hitting the rental market.
Yeah, Matt, because of the tree through our house, which we've talked about here on the show, of course, a couple times, we might have to live elsewhere for a short period of time, making me potentially a short-term renter here in the near future. And I've just been kind of looking around, and it's amazing to see on Zillow, they show when a home that's listed for rent has had its price cut. And I'm seeing price cuts on a bunch of different units, which is something we're not used to seeing. And as landlords ourselves, like, I've never had to do that before, but more and more landlords are having to do it. They were listing their property sky high, and it turns out nobody's interested at that price. And so it's good to see rents coming down. I think that's like really good news for a lot of people who rent.
Sure. But that being said, this isn't to say that across the board that this is a blanket decrease that we're seeing, because some markets are up. It's anecdotal. It depends on the city. It depends, even within a city, it depends on the specific neighborhood, even the specific street. Because I was looking recently, some tenants were looking to renew their lease, and I was shocked to see how much higher the rents were down there. And I was looking at days on market, and these are houses that they've only been on the market for not that long. And I've checked, and other ones that were priced pretty high were gone, which means they got rented. So I knew that meant that, rents are pretty hot down there.
Kind of like we talked about, was it last week or the week before, home prices, and it's a East Coast versus West Coast thing. So maybe the rents are the same way. It just kind of depends. Like you said, like location specific. That is always a thing about real estate.
But at least
this is a broad brush here and kind of an overall national phenomenon. And and the truth is, it's barely a budge. So hopefully we'll see more softening in rents because rents have gone up so quickly for so many people. But how much, it depends really on where you live specifically.
Exactly. Because at least with the housing sales, that was like a large trend of West Coast versus East Coast. But with this, it just varies from state to state. And even within a state, it depends, because I saw that like prices, like rent prices are down in Cincinnati, but they're up in Cleveland. Hmm. So it doesn't, it just depends on the specific market. I think I saw that it was up also in Raleigh. But then you've got cities like Austin and Chicago, and they've seen some steeper drop-offs than a lot of markets. So keep that in mind, because across much of the country, you're likely going to have more ability to negotiate the price of a rental unit than you had in years past. We talked about this in episode 469. So be sure to check that one out if you're looking to use this current trend to your advantage.
Yeah, you might be able to lower that rent amount or find some way to lock in a lower rent amount for a longer period of time. There's all sorts of different tactics you can take. We covered a bunch of those in that episode.
Yeah. Or maybe your rent doesn't go down, but you can get your landlord to start covering some lawn maintenance where maybe previously that was something that you had to do.
Exactly.
Your rent stays the same. You're not actually going to decrease it, but get them to perhaps offer a little more in return for that rent.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that you can negotiate that don't have to do with just that bottom line rent price. So,
yep.
All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode, though. We'll have links to everything that we mentioned here up on the show notes at howtomoney.com. Don't forget to sign up for the How to Money newsletter. It rocks. It comes out every Tuesday. If you missed this past one, you missed the pictures of the tree through my house.
Yes, you did.
And so you can actually go find last week's newsletter up on the website, too.
That's right, man. But that is going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.